All right, so welcome to another deep dive here today. And you know, you're here because you want to get smart fast on, you know, topics that actually matter.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're going to look at this really interesting legal battle.
Yeah.
It's Locke v. Warner Bros. Inc. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Like, Hollywood development deals, that's a whole other universe, right?
Literally.
But actually, the core stuff that we're going to unpack in this case about how contracts work and what happens when they, you know, go off the rails, that stuff's actually super relevant, you know, to all kinds of industries.
Absolutely.
So we're going to break it all down without getting, you know, lost in all that legal jargon.
Yeah, think of it as you're like, you know, backstage pass to understanding this whole complex legal scenario.
Right, exactly.
And so at its heart, we've got actress Sandra Locke.
Mm-hmm.
We got a major studio, Warner Brothers, and a development deal that kind of went sideways.
Yeah, it did not go according to plan.
It really did not. And so our goal today is to pull out the like crucial legal pieces at play here. Specifically this idea of an implied promise of good faith in contracts.
Okay.
And then the fact that you can actually show fraud even if nobody like straight up lies, you know?
Right.
So by the time we're done, you'll see why this case is like still talked about today.
Absolutely. And we've dug into some really good stuff for this one.
Yeah.
We have some background on how to make a good podcast, which we always appreciate.
Always love those.
Always love those tips. Yeah. Mm. And then a really detailed, you know, legal breakdown of the case itself.
Yeah.
So we've sifted through all that to bring you the stuff that you actually need to know.
Exactly.
So let's start with the basics. Who was Sandra Locke and how did this whole Warner Brothers development deal even happen?
So Sandra Locke was a pretty well-known actress, especially known for working with Clint Eastwood.
Mm-hmm.
And their relationship, both personal and professional, eventually ended, which led to a lawsuit between them.
Okay.
And this is like the crucial starting point because the Warner Brothers development deal, it wasn't just like some random opportunity for Locke, right?
Yeah.
It was actually a key part of the agreement to settle that earlier legal fight with Eastwood.
Okay, so this deal came out of resolving another legal issue.
Exactly.
Got it. That's a really important piece of the puzzle here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what exactly did this Warner Brothers development deal promise Locke? Like, what were the actual specifics?
So the contract had a few specific things Warner Brothers had to do. Right?
Okay.
They guaranteed Locke a payment of $1.5 million.
Okay.
They also gave her office space on the studio lot and an assistant.
Nice perks.
Right. Not bad.
Not bad.
And then the like central part of the deal was that Warner Brothers would give her projects what's called a non-exclusive first look.
Okay.
So this meant Locke could bring her movie ideas to Warner Brothers first, and they would get the first chance to develop and produce them.
Mm-hmm.
But, and this is super important.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers still had the final say on whether to green light any project.
Okay.
They weren't obligated to actually make anything she brought to them.
Right. That sounds pretty standard for Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Where the studios, they have a lot of control over what actually gets made.
For sure. For sure.
So what went wrong then?
Yeah.
Why did Sandra Locke end up suing Warner Brothers over this?
Well, Locke's main argument was that Warner Brothers never actually planned to make any of her movies.
Okay.
She claimed that the whole deal was basically a sham.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just a way for Warner Brothers to help Clint Eastwood settle his lawsuit with her.
Right.
Without actually wanting to work with her.
Right.
Creatively.
Yeah.
She basically thought that the guaranteed payment and, you know, the appearance of a development deal were just a way to cover it up.
Right. Like, they were just going through the motions.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so we've got the background, the settlement, the terms of the contract, and Locke's suspicion that it was all fake. So now let's get to the meat of the legal battle here.
Yeah.
What were the main legal questions that the court had to deal with in this case?
So there were two big legal issues at the heart of it all, right?
Okay.
The first was whether Warner Brothers had violated what's called the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing.
Okay.
Which is basically a legal idea that's a part of every contract under California law.
Got it.
And this is, even though Warner Brothers had a lot of discretion to reject projects written into the contract itself.
Right.
The second issue was whether Warner Brothers had committed fraud by, like, entering into this agreement with zero intention of actually doing what they said they would.
Okay, so that implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing.
Right.
We hear that a lot when people talk about contracts.
Yeah.
But how does that actually work when one party, like Warner Brothers in this situation, mm-hmm. has so much power that's like spelled out in the contract, right? If they have yeah. the right to just say no, like where's the line?
Yeah.
Isn't that just, you know, what the contract allowed?
That's a great question. And it's exactly the kind of tricky thing the court had to figure out.
Okay.
So the court said that even when a contract gives one party, like, subjective discretion.
Great.
Like Warner's power to approve or reject projects based on their own creative or business judgment,
mm-hmm.
there's still a fundamental expectation legally that this discretion will be used honestly and in good faith. Oh. It doesn't mean they have to say yes to everything, right?
Right.
But it does mean they have to actually consider the proposals fairly.
Got it.
And that implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing is a really big deal in contract law.
Okay.
It basically says that even if it's not written down explicitly, both sides of a contract are expected to act honestly and fairly with each other.
So even though Warner Brothers technically had the right to reject anything,
yeah.
the court is saying they still had a responsibility to actually consider those projects fairly.
Exactly. And this is where the evidence that Locke brought forward became really important.
Oh.
The court pointed to a really interesting piece of what we call circumstantial evidence,
mm-hmm.
Which was statements that were allegedly made by Warner Brothers executives.
Okay.
So one executive reportedly said, "We're not going to make a movie with her."
Whoa.
And this was in the context of, like, that's Clint's deal.
Okay.
Right, which suggested that the decision wasn't actually about whether Locke's projects were good or not.
Right.
But more about this, like, behind-the-scenes arrangement with Eastwood.
Yeah, that alleged statement is pretty damning.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful stuff.
It really suggests that they had already decided what they were going to do.
Yeah.
So the court used that to say that Warner Brothers' power to just say no
right.
wasn't actually unlimited.
Yeah, exactly. So the trial court had originally sided with Warner Brothers.
Okay.
Basically saying, look, they had the right to reject anything they wanted in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what happens with a summary judgment.
Oh, okay.
Where a lower court decides a case without a full-blown trial. But the Court of Appeal really disagreed with that decision.
Okay.
They actually reversed the summary judgment.
Wow.
Emphasizing that courts can definitely look into whether that contract power was misused because of bad faith.
Okay.
So the implied covenant basically acts as a limit, even on those super strong contract rights.
That makes sense. You can't just hide behind the fine print.
Exactly.
To be unfair.
Right.
Okay. Now let's get into that second big legal issue, the fraud.
Yes.
How do you prove that a company like Warner Brothers never intended to actually do what they promised?
Yeah.
It seems super hard to, like, get inside someone's head.
Right.
And know what they were really thinking.
Yeah. You're totally right. Proving intent, especially when it comes to fraud, can be really tough.
Yeah.
Direct evidence is pretty rare,
mm-hmm.
so courts often have to rely on what we call circumstantial evidence.
Okay.
It's basically looking at all the facts and circumstances around the situation
mm-hmm.
to try and figure out what someone's intentions probably were, right? Like, what would a reasonable person think based on everything going on?
And so what kind of circumstantial evidence did the court look at in Locke's case to say that there might have been fraud?
So they focused on a few key things.
Okay.
First, were those internal statements from Warner Brothers execs that we just talked about.
Right.
That we're not going to make a movie with her comment
mm-hmm.
that really suggests that they weren't interested in working with Locke no matter what she pitched.
Right.
Second, the fact that the development deal came about because of the settlement with Eastwood.
Right.
That raised some eyebrows.
Okay.
The court questioned whether Warner Brothers actually wanted to make movies with Locke
mm-hmm.
or if they were just doing Eastwood a favor to help him get out of that lawsuit.
Yeah.
So for you out there thinking about agreements you might make,
mm-hmm.
this case shows that it's not just about what's written down,
right.
but also about the underlying intentions and the expectation of fair play.
So the context of the deal itself was like a warning sign. Yeah.
Exactly. And the court specifically talked about Warner Brothers' argument that they did what they were supposed to do
okay.
by paying Locke that $1.5 million.
Right.
But the court said just paying her the money didn't automatically mean there was no fraud.
Okay.
Especially if they never actually intended to seriously consider her projects.
Right.
The court even said fraudulent intent may be inferred from failure even to attempt performance.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, the value of a development deal isn't just the money up front.
Right.
It's also the chance to actually get your projects made.
Right, to have a career.
Right, to build your career, exactly.
Yeah.
And if that opportunity wasn't ever real,
yeah,
then just paying the money doesn't mean there wasn't potentially fraud.
That's a really important distinction, right?
Yeah.
Because the benefit that Locke was expecting wasn't just the cash.
Mm-hmm.
It was the chance to work and to, you know, develop her career.
Absolutely.
So why does this case, Locke v. Warner Bros., still matter today? It sounds like it set some pretty important legal ground rules.
Yeah.
You know, even though Warner Brothers had a lot of power on paper, this case shows that even that kind of power has limits.
For sure.
And I think that's something that we'll see has like a lasting impact.
Absolutely.
Beyond just Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it continues to be super important in contract law.
Okay.
Especially in fields where there's a lot of creative freedom, like entertainment, but also in other business situations too.
Why?
Locke really reinforces this idea that even broad contract power isn't a free pass to act in bad faith.
Right.
You can't just use your contract rights to totally screw over the other person's expectations from the deal.
Right.
The court made it super clear that there's this legal expectation of honesty and fairness, even when one side has a lot of power in the contract.
Right.
And the sources we have really highlight how important that is.
And that point about fraud being inferred from someone's actions.
Right.
Rather than needing like a smoking gun of a direct lie.
Absolutely.
That seems like a really practical lesson for anyone who deals with contracts, whether it's negotiating them or dealing with disputes.
For sure. For sure.
Right. You have to look beyond just the words on the page and consider like what people actually did and what their intentions seem to be.
Right. Were they really trying to do what they promised?
Yeah.
Were their decisions based on good reasons?
Right.
Or was there something else going on?
Right, right.
Locke teaches us to look at the bigger picture in all the circumstances.
And it's not about the court, like, second-guessing creative decisions, right?
Yeah.
It's about being able to tell the difference between a legitimate rejection of a project based on its actual quality.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe it just wasn't a good fit for the studio versus a refusal to even consider anything because of some other agenda.
Exactly.
Right. Driven by bad faith.
Yeah. And that's crucial.
That's a really important distinction.
It is. And the court wasn't saying that Warner Brothers had to make Locke's films.
Right.
What they were saying is that Warner Brothers had a responsibility to actually evaluate her ideas honestly.
Right.
And the statements and the whole context of the deal suggested that they never planned to do that.
Right. They weren't even going to give her a fair shake.
Yeah, basically.
This has been such an interesting deep dive.
It has been fascinating.
Into Locke v. Warner Bros. So to quickly recap, the big takeaways for me are the way that the idea of good faith acts as a check, even on really broad contract power.
Right.
And how fraud doesn't always require a smoking gun.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's about the circumstances and what people actually did that tell the story.
Totally. And for our listeners who are all about understanding complicated legal things quickly, this case is a great example of how those contract law principles actually work in real life.
Exactly. And so as you're thinking about this, think about how the stuff we talked about today might show up in other situations where one side of a contract has a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the signs that point to good faith versus bad faith?
Yeah.
In those situations, it's something to really keep in mind as you navigate agreements and obligations.
Absolutely. Always be thinking about the bigger picture.
Exactly.
And whether everyone's playing fair.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
That's it for today.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
We'll catch you next time.
See ya.
On the deep dive.
Bye.